On RSN 97's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
I think you have to be fair that he is beating up consistently on the best horses in Hong Kong. Therefore, he is probably the best horse in Hong Kong.
The Melbourne Cup was gone forever for what it had been. It was so damaged by Anthony Van Dyck and the Chris of Moore. Another one, that's a nail in the coffin.
The one thing that we cannot have is horses dying in the race that is watched by the most people outside of racing, because that is what the shop front window is.
When he's at his best, as James McDonald said after the race, he is the world's best sprinter.
I don't know how other ways I can describe the significance of Jamie Carr and the sisterhood around the world in the saddle. It's the greatest racing story of all time.
What Mick Price has been really good at across his career is setting his good horses a winning pathway.
It's amazing when you're red hot like she is that
the
gaps appear.
The sea part.
Sea's part. Moses intervenes.
No Moses today, but we do have a second coming because Mytho is back on The Verdict. It is good to have you back, Mytho. How are you?
Yes, good. Thanks, Mick. I love that. I reckon that just came straight off the top of the head.
It did.
Too. Well done. No, good to be back. It's been too long, so thanks for inviting me back and look forward to spending the hour with you.
Yeah, well, Matty Stewart's on a road trip. How do you think you'd cope with this? Matty Stewart, his old man and his brother, driving across the Nullarbor up to the top end.
No.
Yes.
No, don't put me through that ever. Don't even suggest it.
I
cold
can't
shivers.
Even imagine what that would be like. Now, Mick Sharkey is not with the boys. He's not in the studio either, but he is here on The Verdict. How are you, Sharknado?
Very well, gentlemen. How are you? Just the myth and phoenix rising from the flames. I don't know what sort of flames. It's been flames of glory in the last couple of months. A Mytho, new stallions and winning races here, there and everywhere. It's everything's been coming up Mytho of late.
It's been good. It has been a good little patch, but we have our peaks and troughs, and we're just riding the wave at the moment, Shark. So, welcome to you. What a great weekend's racing. It was fantastic. I was at Flemington. It was cold. It was winter, but it was very comfortable. I tell you, that facility, I was reminded how good Flemington is on Saturday by going along to a winter meeting, an off-Broadway meeting, if you like. But it was a sensational day, just parked up there. That new grandstand, that members' grandstand's outstanding. And hats off to Flemington. They make every meeting an occasion, which is something I was reminded of on Saturday.
It's interesting you bring that up because there had been a bit of social... I think Tommy Haylock on social media wasn't happy with his day at Flemington at all. And he put out a few things on social media saying it wasn't good for the punters. Now, I didn't get to the new grandstand, and I must admit, I've only been in there a couple of occasions because usually at Flemington I'm working.
Yep.
But I was unaware of any issues. But you were there on Saturday and you thought it was fine from a racing punting
issues?
Perspective. You said that because of COVID, a few televisions were turned off because they obviously don't want, you know, people gathering and so forth like that.
There were some restrictions in bars and they were counting numbers, and that might have been a bit awkward if you were stuck ducking out to go somewhere else. And a racetrack is a bit transient. We do tend to use the whole racetrack, don't we? So I was probably a bit lazy and just parked up in the champagne bar all day. But that may have been an issue. But we've got to cop our lot at the moment, given the world circumstances. So I didn't encounter any of that, but I might have got lucky.
And speaking to Steve Rosich on Saturday morning, I think you have to cut a little slack because they're wanting to get 60,000 to 70,000 to the 4 days of the Flemington Carnival. So they need to go through and jump the hoops at the moment, because if they have COVID people that attend a race meeting and say, hang on, you're breaking these issues here, they may not get what they want come springtime, which if you can get 60,000, 70,000 to Flemington in the spring meetings would be absolutely fabulous. So highlights, we'll put Brooklyn to the side, we'll talk about her in a moment.
No, you're right.
Sharky, the Goodwood, 7-2 XL, just remarkable. Eduardo, who ground out another Group 1 win, and then Realm of Flowers in the Ramsden. What was your 1-2-3 from the highlights of the weekend?
Well, let's not forget about a little horse who I think slipped under the radar to a degree up in Sydney, a horse called Lost and Running, who made it, 6 out of 7 now. John O'Shea says it's the fastest horse he's ever had, the best sprinter that he's ever had, and he's plumping up for an Everest slot. So I think he was a bit of a hidden gem on the weekend. Look, we all love a rags-to-riches story, 7-2 XL, once we all worked out how to say the horse's name. You look back, and the Melbourne Gold Sale was yesterday out at Inglis, an $8,000 buy. He goes and runs Riot in Darwin and Alice Springs, just winning for fun up there. The owners ring up Tony McAvoy and say, we've got a good one for you here, Tone. I reckon there would have been some moments where Tony looked at the form and said, "You're kidding me? This, you know, a horse from Darwin, a horse from Alice Springs," and he goes and wins a Group One. That's another, I guess, rough Group One result. Although Dean Elliott, who we all know, he's a good analyst. He gets on social media, he's sort of involved around the bloodstock circuits here and there, and he made him, I think, well, it wasn't his rammer, Ruffy, Mickey, but it was something like that. He put it out last Thursday and said this horse could lead nearly all the way and give them something to chase. And look, the race didn't pan out that way for him, but a brilliant rags to riches story in Savva to Excel. I think he and Loston running on a weekend for the sprinters, apart from Realm of Flowers, I think they were the two standout stories for me.
The best line from Dean Elliott in that tweet was that Savva Toxel, as I like to call him, sounds like something you'd find in Bob Baffert's veterinary cupboard.
That was a good line.
With all due respect,
that was a good line.
It was outstanding. But I agree with you, Shark. It had to be the story of the weekend, didn't it? Savva to Excel winning. I'll just remind everyone that the Vobis Gold sale continues
10 o'clock today.
Yeah, so don't forget
today.
We've got a few to sell at Rosemont. So let's not forget that it continues
today.
I thought
you were eager to come in today. Now I know why.
We'll see if we can find another Savva to Excel. But and Lost and Running, the other interesting thing, you're always reading between the lines, aren't you, with trainers and jockeys and what's said after races and who's pumping up a horse for different reasons. And I just had a bit of a feel with that Lost and Running that perhaps John O'Shea was just spruiking this horse to get it to Hong Kong for the big bucks.
Oh.
And there was just enough going on that made me think, this is all about getting the getting those agents worked up into a frenzy. But last Saturday all day with John O'Shea because we had a couple of runners in the in the Gosford, the coast, and I asked him about Lost and Running and said, Hong Kong, are we is that what we're gearing up towards? And he said, no, he's better than that, and he failed the vet.
Oh, okay.
So he's not going to Hong Kong.
Okay.
So that's really
it's all
interesting.
Everest. But is that that's the sales all pitch? Because
John, I think he genuinely feels that the
best
horse,
sprinter he's ever had.
Yeah, I don't think it's a put on, and John's not one for a put on. He calls a spade a shovel, and he likes this horse a lot. So I'm excited to see what he can do for the rest of the Brisbane campaign. And I like the performance of Mimi's Award too, for obvious
really
reasons.
Good.
Yeah, Seamus Award doing unbelievable things in recent weeks and proving to be the best stallion in Victoria each and every week at the moment.
He's flying, absolutely flying. The Victorian stallions are flying at the moment, Toronado as well. Tell me, did you have any pangs of regret? You would have been celebrating Brooklyn Hustle's win. Finally, she got to the post, and Jamie Carr, I noted how you tweeted the ultimate gear change, Jay Carr on board. But when you had a look at the Goodwood, did you think, Behemoth ran below par, maybe Geetra wasn't back to his Everest performance on Saturday. Could you have had a crack and been in the finish in the Goodwood?
Certainly the sectionals showed that she would have been more than competitive in the Goodwood. She ran quicker last 600, 400, 200 than Savva to Excel. Slipped out of the barriers, so that went wrong for her. She probably could have, but it was time just to say, well, let's come back a notch and get a job done. She hadn't won a stakes race, and while she's been a high profile Group One runner, she hadn't been able to clunk one. She's run half her life in Group One races, so we've really stepped her up. But every time she's run a Group One, there seemed to have been an obvious Group One to run in next, and she'd run well enough to say she could win this. She probably should have won the Oakley Plate with a bit of a bit of luck in running, and we wouldn't have been too bothered about that. But she had to just win a stakes race, and that looked the obvious choice, and it was well done to Jason Warren. It worked out for everyone because Mark Zahra had done nothing wrong on Brooklyn Hustle, but with the imminent arrival of his child, he elected to stay a bit closer to home and couldn't commit to the South Australian meeting a week or so ago, and Jamie was available to ride, so he dominates Flemington. Jamie goes on Brooklyn Hustle. We win the proud miss, and now we can campaign into Queensland and see if she can get that elusive Group 1 victory up there. So I think it's worked out perfectly. No regrets at all, and well done to the... we would have blown up the story of the weekend. Otherwise, Savva to Excel. Well done.
Mitho, you mentioned the ultimate gear change. We'll indulge a little longer on Brooklyn Hustle while we've got you. What do you think, in your view, and it's been an amazing season that Jamie Carr's put together to this point, but every week she just seems to produce another great ride. You know, from your point of view, from an owner, somebody that's looking to put her on horses, what makes her so good in your eyes?
I had a long chat to Dean Lester on Friday about various things, but we spent a bit of time talking about Jamie, and he's obviously an expert in this field and has successfully managed jockeys in the past. And he actually uses Jamie as an example to those jockeys he's mentoring at the moment and where to position themselves on the horse and where their weight is forward of
physically on the horse.
Physically on the horse. And she just naturally does it to give the horse the best advantage to carry the weight. And by that, he tried to explain it to a novice like me who's ridden a pony trail only. But he meant that the weight sits forward of the wither, which means that all the weight bearing of the horse is actually bearing the weight rather than back in the saddle and over the back, which means the horse has to carry the weight in what is an awkward spot. So if you'll note in a race, you can pick Jamie Carr in the run because she sits so far forward. Mm. And that's where she's comfortable. That's where she rides, I'm assuming, unless she's taught herself and realises that's where she gets her advantage. But they spoke also about Joe Moreira back when he was dominating Asian racing like no man ever had before. And it was all about his weight distribution. When someone broke it down and analysed him and looked at what he did, it was about him. And it was almost for Joe Moreira, if I'm right, it was transfer of weight. He was able to transfer from one side of the horse to the other. So there was an even distribution throughout the course of the race of the horse's physical being and physical body being able to carry that weight. It wasn't just in one area that then fatigued earlier or one leg or forward or backwards of the saddle. So I think Jamie's just got this innate ability to have horses feel like they're carrying less weight, and ultimately we know that that's what we differentiate good horses and bad horses with. So if she's got that natural advantage, she's going to win more races, and we're seeing it live and up close.
Interesting that you just on the jockeys. I had Michael Kent Jr. who did the 10 o'clock show with us, and he was brilliant on Saturday, and it was great to get his insights as a trainer and someone who's, you know, at the coalface. And we were just talking about jockeys in general, and it came up the fact that our races don't tend to be run as generally, and jockeys like to sit back and take a sit. This is fascinating. Have a listen to what Michael Kent Jr. had to say about that on Saturday morning.
The thing with all our racing at the moment, especially in Melbourne, they go so slow, especially these staying races. They're not...
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you give your jockeys a license to say, hey, if the lead is there, you can take it up?
We don't really... yeah, we do. Yeah, correct. Actually... It's a recent topic of ours between myself and Mick Price is you know, we're going to go back to the old way of just putting our horses in the race. You know, we've been trying to ride them more patiently, and when you get those races that are run at a farcical speed, you just got no chance. So we'll be putting our horses in the first four or five for more often now.
It's interesting to note that they've actually discussed that you can't win if you're sitting out the back these days.
Yeah, and I think, Shark, that it would be pretty well known out there that trainers like Peter Moody, Gay Waterhouse, there's a few others that I've left out there, quite a few, who are naturally train their horses to be up on speed, and they win a lot of races. And that's why. I mean, until there's a seismic change in the way we run our races, Shark, I think those trainers that train for go-forward horses are going to continue to dominate.
Yeah, absolutely. And this isn't just a recent phenomenon. Like, this has been going on for many, many years. And the lady you just mentioned, Gay Waterhouse, like, she's made an absolute art form of it. You know, her horses forever and a day have been go-forward, sit-on-speed horses. They're fitter than anyone else's. They're sitting right up there on the pace. You know, this is something that she learned from her father around that theory, you know, that in Australian racing, the majority of horses that can settle in the, you know, first half of the field, like, they're winning the bulk of the races. It's common sense as far as trainers like that see it, and that's why they prepare their horses to settle up and to race in that manner. And look, it's sometimes as a punter you get drawn in and sucked into you know, for lack of a better term, while we've got her in mind, Brooklyn Hustles of this world, you know, that get back and flash home to the line and pump the line, and you think, whoa, have a look at this thing running big sectionals. But they don't often win. Mm. The horses that win are those ones that ride up on the pace and can cruise along at a good tempo and give kick after kick after kick. And, you know, we get carried away a little bit with the sexiness of the late closers sometimes as punters, but stats tell us otherwise when it comes to actually making a dollar.
Well, the two Group 1 races on Saturday, Savatou Excel and Eduardo. Eduardo let fast horses run fast and off he went. So it's interesting. I spoke to Gay. We had a runner with Gay on Saturday in the two-year-old race in the National Stakes over there in South Australia, Butterblonde. And she was, well, Anthony, we'll go forward. Yeah. Oh, no surprise there, Gay. I said, well, hopefully we get the go forward. And the great advantage that you've got if you're in the Gaywood House stable is that quite often they'll sit off her because they know that at all costs that jockey has been told go forward, lead and do not accept anything else. So they'll sit off, and suddenly you get the cheap sectionals, which is what we're hoping for Butterblonde. It didn't happen, and she perhaps wasn't quite up to it, but they got her late, and she tired, but she came to the end of the prep. But it's interesting talking to Gay about that. She uses it now as a tactic that where she'll intimidate other stables and other competitors to stay off and make sure that she gets an easy lead and she wins a lot of races.
Just quickly before we talk about Realm of Flowers, so just wrapping up, Sharky, the Goodwood, were you disappointed with Geetra Behemoth? What happened to Behemoth on Saturday?
I think it might be a case of, you know, there was a prep, you know, for earlier in that summer autumn period. They're up for that. You know, well, we've raced, we're going to freshen up and go for the Goodwood, and it doesn't often work that freshen up. Remember, these horses have campaigned in the spring as well, so we ask a little bit of them to keep buttering up and stumping up in these group run races. And okay, it's a Goodwood, it's not, you know, it's not a new market, but there was still some good depth in that race, and you've got horses like Instant Celebrity, who was coming off a group one win against the girls the start before, you know, Rock Hard Fit set there ready to peak for that race. Yes, face value, they were disappointing, I guess, but, you know, a little had been asked of them. I think if you look at Eduardo's performance in the context of the, you know, the sprint races we had over the weekend, that was nearly the standout training performance. Mm. You know, the horse has been up for a little while. Joe Pride admitted after the race he's probably at the end of his prep. He still had enough tickets there to run quickly and run fast, as Eduardo wants to do, and then hold on late. And I think it was not a big wide margin win that spoke to the horse's dominance in terms of class, but it was an effort where you probably give a big thumbs up to Joe Pride and said, you left enough in the tank to come and get the job done, and the horse wins its second group one, you know, at the end of its most successful campaign, arguably. So it was a very good training performance from Joe Pride with Eduardo.
Yeah, and even just talking to Nash this morning, he admitted that the horse was bottomed out at the 200. It wasn't the same Eduardo that we'd seen bolting in a galaxy, but his guts got him through it.
Yeah, he's a tough horse. So you'd love to own him, wouldn't you? And well done to all the team, everyone that's been involved in that Eduardo story, because a stable change, and it's hard to do and go to a next level, but they've been able to do it.
Could Realm of Flowers win a Melbourne Cup?
Oh, I don't. Shark's probably a better form analyst than me to answer that, but going off history says that the Andrew Ramsden isn't quite at that quality yet. The things that go to advantage will be the uncertainty around the internationals and how many come and who's brave enough to take up the challenge of new quarantine procedures and procedures here in Australia to run those internationals as parachute in horses. So that's going to be an extra factor that probably, yeah, gets the horse a little closer. But I'd like to see the Andrew Ramsden step up a level. I'd love to see.
Step up a level, what the quality of the horses?
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure. Is it run at the right time of year to be a win it and you're in it race? I'm not entirely sure that the real gun Melbourne Cup horses are in full work and fully primed up right now during May. You know, perhaps they're having a break.
So when would you run it?
Getting ready. Well, I just think we've got to have a look at these win it and you're in it races. I'm obviously biased given my postcode, but I just don't know why the Geelong Cup isn't a win it and you're in it race. I know it virtually has been with Greg Carpenter making sure almost that the winner gets the weight penalty to get in if it's not already in, but why not just put the imprimatur on it and make that the win it? It's the perfect timing. It's the perfect race for those internationals to come in and have a lead-up run, and you win that race and you're straight into the Melbourne Cup. It would be a fantastic concept to try and beat the handicapper and hide your horse away, win a Geelong Cup, get in on the lightweight, don't get a penalty, and you're in, or an appropriate penalty. I'm just not sure that it sits at the right time. I'd love to hear from a trainer on that.
I asked Michael on Saturday. He said he's got no issues because it's actually
They've got no issues, but is it ideal?
Taken the spot of the Adelaide Cup.
Yeah, but
when the Adelaide Cup used to be run at this time.
But you're talking about probably
Danny O'Brien.
All things being equal, is it the B grade group of stayers that are all power to it. It's a good concept, and it gives someone a runner in the race, and I'm not denying anyone that, but if we want the best quality, don't you have a win it and you're in it race 2 weeks before the Melbourne Cup?
What's the best quality of 2 mile stayer we've got in Australia at the moment?
That's other than the Melbourne Cup.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you've got your Sydney Cup, you've got your Adelaide Cup, and you've got Realm of Flowers. Probably should have won a Sydney Cup. Didn't have the best of luck. So where are you going to get a better field? When are you going to place the Andrew Ramsden to get a better field of 2 milers in Australia?
2 weeks before the Melbourne Cup.
But you can't have an Andrew Ramsden 2 weeks before a Melbourne Cup.
Why not?
I don't know whether you'd have too many stayers that would go to 2 miles before a 2 mile grand final.
I see what you're saying. The two miles.
2,800 to 2 miles. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I suppose I just let facts tell me the story, and the facts are the Andrew Ramsden winner since this initiative hasn't been good enough.
Well, it's been the third year, I suppose.
Yeah,
it?
and best finish has been 10th or 9th.
I think. Yeah, where did Oceanex run last year? Might have been 11th, was it? Or
I think it might have got a prize, so it might have been. Oh, it was paid down to 12th, so it might have been 11th.
And then Steel Prince was the year before, just beat Surprise Baby, who probably should have won a Melbourne Cup.
And
arguably, you'd say, Sharky, that this win on Saturday, of the three that have been winning, you're in, was the most dominant we've seen.
Oh, without a doubt. And from a young mare that still has more to come, you would think, and she absolutely slayed them on Saturday. It was, as you say, totally dominant. And I think there was enough depth in the form to say that she's some sort of chance of being, you know, competitive in a post-COVID Melbourne Cup when we don't know what the makeup of the internationals is going to be like. And I don't mind this race in this position. It gives the horses post Sydney Cup and Adelaide Cup a chance to run. Trainers can be smart and set a younger or a, you know, less exposed stayer like a Grand Promenade for it, you know, coming through the grades. You had Persan who ran fifth in the Melbourne Cup last year. Like, he's not racing at his best at the moment, clearly, but you know, he was still there to take his place. I thought there was enough interest. There was probably 4 or 5 genuine winning chances in the race. I don't mind it sitting in this sort of time frame because I don't want, and I don't think the race wants either, every possible win and you're in option being in that month before the Cup. I think we need, as a sport, we probably need that length of time to build the story. And, you know, here's Ocean X, here's Steel Prince, whoever it is. Of course, they're already in the Melbourne Cup. You know, we keep crying poor about, oh, we've got no horses we can follow, no local horses we can take to a Melbourne Cup and the general public can get behind or follow there or understand that they're already in the race. Well, this race gives us that opportunity. It's not perfect, but I think at least it caters to a certain style of horse that is making its way rather than one that's been bought to serve a purpose, you know, in a quick turnaround sort of Tats Lotto ticket relationship with the best race we've got here, or you know, the most famous race that we've got in Australia. I don't mind it where it is. I think it'll continue to build. I don't think we can judge it too harshly just yet.
I think it could evolve too, Mick, and you might know, you'll know better than me because you've bought these horses internationally and campaigned them down here for Melbourne Cups and the like. Is it the type of race that, with these new changes, some of these international agents and maybe even international trainers and owners might say, let's get down there early. Let's set our horse for the Andrew Ramsden, sneak in under the handicapper, win the Andrew Ramsden and put the horse away for then the spring and the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that happening, and particularly as agents and buyers look for those less exposed stayers that haven't got the big proven group form lines. You know, money talks, and the money that people ask for the better qualified horses and the horses that are already in the race, it's astronomical, you know, or it has been anyway. What it is this year, we'll wait and see with the new rules. But I think buyers have to get more creative, and it's only a matter of time before somebody says, rightio, we're bringing an import out. It's had eight starts. We think it's around this standard. We're going to target the Andrew Ramsden and then try and win our way in. A bit like, as you say, trying to beat the handicapper. Well, here's a great option and a great opportunity to do that. So I'm not certain what that buying market is going to be like this year for overseas horses. The way they've scheduled this announcement, it sort of cancels out a lot of your European horses that would be bought to come here and target the Cup straight off. Like, they're going to have to go through all these vet examinations and everything else. You only need a slight issue to, you know, to put a big question mark over your head in terms of competing in those races. So I think buyers that want to get in early, as you say, Mytho, and plan ahead, that the Ramsden will probably be that race that they really do gravitate towards.
And Brendan Cormick on the tweet, just also, we can't forget that the Bart Cummings is 3.5 weeks before the Melbourne Cup, and it is a win and you're in that time slot as well.
Yeah,
the Bart Cummings.
Yeah.
A few SMSs coming through here. Maybe move the Andrew Ramsden a couple of weeks earlier, one listener is saying. Bart Cummings horses, how would they have gone in this modern era? Most of them were take your time, settle out the back and run on, from a listener here. There's an SMS here saying, Jamie Carr doesn't know why she is a freak, just as Dusty doesn't know why he's a freak. They're just born that way. It's not a bad correlation at the moment, the way both of them are going. Another SMS saying, who has had a better week in racing? Is it Jamie Carr or a partner, Clayton Douglas, who after riding the grand annual winner, he trained his first double during the week, and then he trained his first winner at Flemington on Saturday, Mimosas in the first.
Yeah, unbelievable. I caught Clayton on the phone after she rode the double for Clayton at Mornington, and they were off to celebrate. They were going to have a pizza and a glass of wine, and I said to the pair of them driving the car, I said, you're going to end up alcoholics if you start celebrating every time something happens, because over the last week, they would have had something to celebrate, those two, Jamie Carr and Clayton Douglas, every day. So, well done.
She does like a celebration, which is good to see. She likes a big cheese board as well, so she knows how to live the good life as well as riding all the good horses, Jamie Carr. Hey, we need to take a break. Keep the SMSs coming through, 0416 90 50 52. Going to talk Peter Volandis. He lost the case against the ABC. We'll bring that up as well. Want to talk about internationals. Speaking of, will they be coming? There was a couple of good performances overseas. The Preakness, we'll discuss that as well. I've got a little bit of breaking news, which I'll drop about what the Spring Carnival, a few race date changes and prize money incentives or increases, which will be announced this week. But after the break, I'm going to have a chat to Michael Walker live from his hospital bed. It's been a tough few days for the Cuz. We'll get the latest after this.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Keep your SMSs coming, 0416 90 50 52. We'll get to them a little later, but right now we are going to go to Dandenong Hospital, where Michael Walker is in a pretty bad way. We know how tough Michael Walker and what he's been through, and it looked like a fairly innocuous fall on Thursday night, but the upshot is that he's not in the best of health, and it's been great that he can join us on the phone this morning, despite what he's been through. Michael, there's a lot of people asking us here, SMSs, how is Michael Walker faring? So for all the listeners out there, how are you doing?
Hey, mate, I'm doing okay. I'm alive, that's the main thing. I'm in hospital, obviously, medicated up to keep everything under control, and it was one of the most probably easiest falls I've ever been involved in my life, and it's been the worst one.
It seems what we've been reading that it's been quite horrific for you. Can you give a quick summation of what you've been through? You've already had a number of operations, and what is happening with the leg?
So I came here on the Thursday night, and I was in excruciating pain. I was bawling my eyes out. I was crying. I couldn't handle it. It's a thing called compartment syndrome. So it's like, you look at that form, like I was going to fall nice on my feet, and then the horse's back leg come through and kicked me in the calf. So when it kicked me in the calf, obviously everything inside my calf, that area has exploded. Well, there's nowhere for it to go. So my legs just try to pop like a balloon, and it was getting tighter and tighter and tighter and more swollen. So once this happened at 9 p.m. at night with the race, I never got operated, or they didn't work out till 4:30 a.m. Friday morning what it was. So I was in pain that whole time. Every single thing they could give me wouldn't work. I just was in pain. I couldn't take it. I was telling them to chop my leg off. I was that much pain. So they obviously worked out what was compartment syndrome, which they did two cuts either side of my calf to release it. And it's still all open now. There's two, like, probably 8 or 9 centimetre cuts. You can see it. I'm looking at it now. I've got a brace on, but there's two tubes coming out that's sucking out all the blood and all the fluid and everything. So I'm looking at that right now. They had a second operation yesterday, which was to try and close it up. But they couldn't because it was too swollen. So I'm going for a third operation tomorrow. And if they can close it up, they will, or else I have to have a 2 days' time, fourth operation to have a skin graft to close it up. And then I do that, probably 2 months recovery. Then I got to get fibula that I broke, also ACL joint and MCL joint that I did as well. So that might be knee reconstruction or more time out right now.
Gee, so the operations you've had at the moment have been to release the pressure. It's not actually anything to do with the break of the leg.
No, nothing to do with my knee, the ACL, the MCL, or the fibula. This is to actually save my leg. Ron Hall came and visited me in the hospital, and he knows of people that have had to amputate their legs. So that's why they rushed me in for emergency surgery. So if it was any longer, that they would have had to have amputated my leg.
Michael, it sounds horrendous. Anthony Mithen here. You know, it was only a week or so ago you were riding Butter Blonde to victory for us down there in the Rosemont colours at Warrnambool. But you know, here you are with a long, long road to recovery. I know you're probably not thinking too much about getting back in the saddle, but are you committed to that recovery process through and through?
I'm committed. I'm sorry, guys, I'm just a bit...
No, don't blame you.
...drugged blame out at the moment. But I'm committed to every recovery process. We all know the injuries I've had and the comebacks and hurdles I've had to jump to get back. And I'll be doing everything in my power to do it again. But I don't think anyone knows the time frame, like how long the piece of string. You know, like ACLs, how long do footy players have out?
12 months. Yeah, 12 months. They've got to probably do a bit more twisting and turning, but nonetheless. And I only asked that question. I didn't want to put you on the spot, but I know you're such a popular figure. You're such a popular jockey out there, and you've got such a fan base that I'm sure everyone would be hanging on that answer to that question of whether or not you're going to come back, because we all want to see you back. We all want to see you healthy. And any encouragement you need to get through this next 3, 4, 5, 6 months, maybe longer, you know you've got plenty of support around, so we really hope that things go smoothly from here. And now they've got that compartment syndrome sorted, you can get the tibia right and the ACL and the MCL and get the support required. So how long are you looking at in hospital, do you know?
I think I'm in, it depends how this operation goes tomorrow. If they can close it up, I'd be another week. If they got a skin graft, will be another 2 weeks. And I doesn't even feel long for me because I'm just medicated the whole time, if you know. I don't know if you get what I mean, you know. I just feel like I'm floating on a balloon this whole time.
Well, it's probably better than where you were on Thursday night. Yeah. Do you remember much about the fall? It sounds like you thought it was all pretty innocuous and you were going to land on your feet and everything was going to come up roses. Yeah.
I remember everything. I remember it was slow-mo. I was looking at the synthetic game. Oh, yeah, going to have my first fall on this. That's what I was thinking to myself. Mm. And then just as I touched the ground with my feet, her back leg come through and give me a boot in the calf and said, hang on, bud, you're not getting out of it that easy.
Michael, appreciate...
what happened. And, you know, it's just hard. I've got a young family. Yeah. My son came in here the other day and he doesn't even want to come near me. I've got that much stuff hanging out of me. And then he was trying to kick off the brace because he didn't want it on me. And Lauren's trying to deal with him, and you know, I just want to be home with my family. Mm. I can't, you know.
Michael, we're fingers crossed. We wish you all the best, and mate, everyone out there will support you no matter what you want because you're a great character, and to hear the anguish and the pain in your voice despite the medication and to describe in graphic detail what you're going through. SMSs are coming through saying jockeys don't get paid enough. They deserve much more. How brave are these jockeys? It's unbelievable. You are all heroes.
Yeah, that you absolutely and heroes, and you are being remembered as that hero, and we look forward to embracing you back to the race course sooner rather than later, Michael. All the best.
Thank you.
Good luck, cuz. I appreciate that. He's obviously quite emotional there. Like, could you imagine what he's going through at the moment? And talking about his family and his young boy in there, and we forget all the time. We talk about jockeys, you know. People jump online and they bag them if they ride a bad one, but you forget that it's life and death every single time they get on a horse. And it's National Jockey Trust Day out at Flemington on Saturday, which is their big fundraising day. I'm going to head to Caulfield and do a little special tomorrow with the program with jockeys on what they go through, from getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning doing track work to, you know, risking their lives every time they jump on a horse. And I think Michael puts that into perfect perspective then. Overseas, and unfortunately, there was a young Mauritius jockey, Nourish Jugalal, who passed away. He's 29 years of age in a fall on Saturday over there. He's got two young kids and a wife. We've got to remember, this is the only sport that an ambulance follows athletes around.
Yep.
And it is the most dangerous individual sport going for any sporting person in the world.
I just
need to remember that.
I just call on anyone who's on social media, follows Michael Walker, send him a message if you're listening today and you're on Twitter, and just send it, drop him a message to his whatever his last tweet was, and he'll read those and get a kick out of that. And we've got to constantly be supporting these guys who deserve all the accolades in the world and deserve our support in a time of need. And you could hear the tears in Michael Walker's voice there as he signed off, and we appreciate him coming on. But I think everyone, we're used to seeing happy-go-lucky cuz on a race course, you know, playing up for the cameras and riding winners, but that's the reality of it, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a tough one.
No doubt about that. Let's just change tack for a little bit because we're expecting an announcement in the next couple of days, maybe as soon as tomorrow, but hopefully this week. Prize money. There's been a big prize money announcement in New South Wales, and I know Racing Victoria has been looking at that. So there's a few little whispers, a few little leaks about the proposed Spring Carnival race dates that are coming.
Yeah, what have you got here, Michael?
Dan Malecki.
You've teased us before.
Give
the
Dan
break.
Malecki the credit for this. He first put this on the radar that the Underwood Stakes meeting, which is the traditional Caulfield Group 1 meeting after the grand final on a Sunday, with the grand final going back, you know, touch wood, COVID reliant this year to the normal dates. The COVID, the Underwood on the Sunday will move to Sandown. They will race the Underwood Stakes meeting at Sandown. They're looking to have the Underwood around about 750,000, Group 1. But the other aspect is that Sandown gets the Underwood. They'll probably try to make it a bit of a family-friendly day off the back of the grand final, maybe free entry.
Did you say $750,000 for the Underwood back end of November?
No. Underwood stays
Where it is.
Area. Back end of November, Zipping Classic meeting. So Sandown will get Underwood. The Zipping Classic will come to Caulfield.
I see. Right.
And the Zipping Classic will be worth $750,000, which is up from around about $350,000. And it'll be run at Caulfield, but not in its traditional time slot the week after Flemington.
Okay.
It will be put back to the last Saturday in November. So there'll be a three-week gap between final day at Flemington, and they'll run the Pakenham Cup meeting, the Ballarat Cup meeting in that two-week period. So
I like it.
We know the MRC last year, we're talking about trying to push further back into November where there is better weather and clear air, only show in town pretty much. So that is what I believe will be one of the announcements. There'll be a few others as well, but that's probably the major announcement for the rejigging and little tweak to this year's Spring Carnival. What do you think about that, Mitho?
I like it a lot because you do tend to be pretty exhausted by the time you come to the end of the Spring Carnival. You've got to go to Sandown, which is not... Let's face it, it's off Broadway for our city tracks, and it's a great track, and it's a great track to bet on, but it's not the track that you put in the diary and say, oh, got to go to Sandown and go to Zipping Classic Day, but you'll go to the Underwood, won't you? You'll go and watch a $750,000 race at Sandown.
No, the Underwood's going to stay in its time.
Yeah, yeah, but it goes to Sandown?
Yeah, on the day after the grand final.
That's what I'm saying. You'll go because it's going to be a lead-up and a build-up to all that's still to come. So everyone will be revved up saying, well, let's get to Sandown. There's plenty of good racing to come, and it exposes that track to perhaps a whole new clientele that might fall in love with Sandown over again.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Sandown doesn't get the A-grade races, Sharky, so to have a Group 1 Underwood at Sandown on the Sunday after would be good, but I don't mind having the gap back to Caulfield, Zipping Classic Day, to put a full stop on the carnival after a couple of provincial cup meetings. I suppose from a horse perspective, Sharky, and you've dealt a lot with the internationals and the stayers, would you think you'll get a stronger Zipping Classic if you run it 3 weeks after the final day of the Flemington Carnival worth $750,000? Or is it going to be a stretch too far for a lot of horses at the end of November after a long spring?
Well, you're pushing it further away from the races that everyone wants to win, which are the Caulfield and Melbourne Cups, and further away again from McKinnon's and races that, you know, could feed a race like the Zipping Classic. I like the thought around changing it and moving it back and something like that and trying to attract a different style of horse. I don't mind that. Moving it away from Sandown, I don't know. I'm a bit like the, I guess, you sort of take a little leaf, although probably not as far as Mick goes, but, you know, the Mick Kent theory that Sandown's the best track, Hillside's the best track we've got in Victoria, why don't we race there more often? Taking this meeting, which is from a race goer point of view, going out to Sandown's probably not high on the priority list, but from a punting point of view, that Sandown Zipping Classic meeting is one of the best punting meetings of the entire Spring Carnival, and it's been that way for probably the last 20 years.
Fields have been a bit thin in recent years on that day, though. They've been a bit smallish, the fields on that Zipping Classic day in recent years.
But that's okay. Look, that's probably a product of the rigours of the carnival prior. You know, we only have a certain amount of horses. We can't keep churning out more and more and more and more and more horses every week, and expecting them to just keep buttering up. There are good spoils there to be won by those that perhaps want to aim up at that meeting. It's a great punting day. I like it at that venue. Moving it back to Caulfield or moving it to Caulfield, yeah, for mine, that just sort of detracts a little bit from it, particularly after Caulfield's had a busy spring.
There's going to be prize money announcements as well. Ooh. Now, as an owner, one of the big owners and breeders here, I think there's going to be more money that is obviously given out, not just to the higher races. I think there's talk of maybe $750,000 minimum for Group 1 races to have the standard of prize money for Group 1 races, but also maybe a differential between listed Group 3 races and normal Saturday races. Where do you think the focus should be for prize money, Mitho?
Yeah, I think there's got to be a level of consistency. That would be a starting point, I think. That you do tend to run in some Group 1s and they're of $400,000 and others are of $7 million. And it's sort of hard to get your head around it. And I get that the Group 1 status gives you some breeding pool and helps with your families, and it's not going to prevent you from racing if you're racing for 400,000 and Group 1 status. Well, you're going to go there anyway, but it would be better if it all married up a little. And the best example is probably down a few rungs where you've got listed races and Group 3 races that where the prize pot sometimes isn't as much as a three-year-old Vobis race on the same day because of the Vobis ad, and if there's a Vobis gold bonus as well, it suddenly trickle. The winning purse is actually more than winning a listed race or a Group 3 race. Well, we've got to, we can't have that because horses will be dragged into those races rather than running for what are supposed to be our premium races. So I think there's got to be a level of consistency. I've been long an advocate for there should be a $50,000 maiden every day of the week, Monday to Friday. It give back to the people that are putting their hard-earned in, putting their hand in their pocket and trying to win a race, wherever it may be. And let's make sure that those guys get a really good slice of the pie and feel good about their investment in racing a horse so they go again and they reinvest. Because you can't tell me that all that money that Red Zell won, did all those guys from the Everest money, did they spend all that money back in racing? I bet there were boats and houses and cars bought that all that money went out of racing. And you can't blame them for that. But if we're looking after our own industry, give it back to the grassroots. Give it back to the participants that are wanting to go to Warwick Nabil and win a $50,000 maiden or Hamilton or wherever the case may be. So I'd love to see that happen. I've been a long advocate for that and push for that. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to say it again.
it's a great point you make, Mitho. And, you know, so often you look at the prize money announcements, it's all at the top end, you know, where such a small portion of people can play. And, yeah, it's great. It's aspirational, you know, Everest and Melbourne Cup's worth gazillion dollars and all this sort of stuff. It's a great dream to be had. But the stark reality of horse racing in this country is that a maiden race is probably the most achievable goal that any horse owner can have. You know, ticking that box, you've won your maiden, what's next? So why not, as you say, bulk up that bottom end, that first win, that maiden win? We're not rewarding mediocrity. What we're doing is making that first win special. You know, it's something to celebrate. Here's a $50,000 maiden. Wow, what'd you win? Well, your horse won its first race. Well, fantastic. What'd you get back for it? Oh, we got $20,000. We got $30,000. We got however much it is. It just helps the economics of that situation, and it puts that seed in somebody's mind that this journey, this experience, it's worthwhile, and it's worthwhile emotionally and from a fun point of view. But hey, look. Look at this check that just arrived in my account 2 weeks after my horse won its maiden. It's worth it financially too. I think we need to keep reaffirming that to the everyday players who, you know, Melbourne Cups are fantastic, but really knocking one over at Ballarat on a Tuesday is probably more achievable.
Exactly. I'm glad you're on board on that one. We can build a campaign rather than this, you know, this thirst for Racing New South Wales to creak open the war chest with tens of millions. They say the war chest is unbelievable up there. It's pretty easy for Peter Valendis to go and put his hand in.
Valendis?
Oh, Valendis, isn't it? I like to call him Peter Valendis because he's just lending out the money that's in the big war chest. And, I mean, that's not hard to do. Everyone says he's a genius. Well, go and just put your hand in the pot of money that's been made over the course of decades of shrewd management. I find it staggering that it's all about the headline. It's not actually about the participant.
Well, hopefully, we don't know. There may be some more at the bottom line. We'll find out hopefully this week, because I believe there's going to be some significant prize money announcements coming through Victoria. And the SMSs are saying here that a lot are with you, Mitho. It should be focused on maidens and the P2 meetings where most of the battlers are to keep people engaged in racing.
Get out to Vobis Gold and buy your next one.
Yep.
And hopefully the wheels keep turning.
A couple of quick ones. Peter Valendis, as you mentioned, your mate, he did lose his defamation case against the ABC. Now, he said this is just the first round in what is going to be a long fight. He's going to appeal it.
Who's paying for that, by the way?
Well, you'd think it would be him personally. He said any money that he did when he was going to donate to charity, so there's no issues there. I hope it does. I don't know. Is it continuing through the courts? Does it still have racing's name, which is a bad connotation, to this. And Peter Volandis, if he feels he's been personally slighted, has every right to take it as far as he wants to.
He wasn't shown the video clip of the abattoir vision. Well, I've been a journo. I don't know that I've always gone to my subject and interviewed them, giving them every single skerrick of information that I've got. You're obliged to give them the context of why you're asking those questions, which I think happened. But anyway, a judge has found that anyway, so he can fight that till the cows come
that
home,
will
I suppose.
Continue.
But I don't know that it's good for anyone other than Peter's ego.
Well, at the moment, he's losing, but he's going to keep fighting. Sharky, just a quick one. Internationals, we don't know. I spoke with Paul Bloodworth via text message last night. Al-Azi, is that horse we were talking about? There's been some great international racing over the weekend. He won very impressively over 2,400 metres at Newbury on Saturday night. He's the second favourite for the Caulfield Cup in markets. Traditionally, he's trained by William Haggis. Traditionally, Paul says it's hard to get those Shadwell horses out here to Australia with the increased scrutiny on getting them out here. There's no certainty that he will actually come out here as well. And just as we wrap up, what do you make of the Preakness yesterday? Sharky, did you keep an eye on the Preakness where Medina Spirit had a labouring third place after all the controversies around the Kentucky Derby win?
Look, it was always going to be the story of the race, wasn't he? But a labouring third in the Preakness is probably still a lot better than a lot of the others could have hoped for. Look, it was part of that sideshow, I guess, that we're witnessing now with Bob Baffert and this positive test with Medina Spirit and where that goes. Does the Preakness really register for Australians? I'm not sure. You know, I think the horse you mentioned going, you know, is a Caulfield Cup, Melbourne Cup chance, and it winning at Newbury probably is more important for us. But what I'm interested with these Europeans that, you know, are all touted for the Melbourne Cup, Caulfield Cup, whatnot, what this will do to the markets. You know, the whispers around who's coming what, and there's plungers and people are buying horses and the odds come tumbling in. With all this uncertainty around horses, will they, won't they pass vet tests? I wonder what it does to, you know, our friends at the Tab and the like who frame these long-range markets. I wonder how many punters will be willing to dip their toe with all this uncertainty going around.
Shout out to Shark. It would be remiss of us not to put it in the highlights right off the top of the hour. Bob Scarborough bred the French Guineas winner. Overnight. Congratulations, yes, to Mark's Basilica.
Very good win.
Half brother to Magna Grecia, who also won a Guineas. So he's bought a mare, Cabaret, and he's bred it beautifully to provide two Guineas winners, Group 1 Guineas winners, St Mark's Basilica winning the French Guineas overnight. So well done to Bob Scarborough and the team at Woodnook Farm.
Yeah, absolutely. That is absolutely massive. Mitho, you've got to get out to day two of the gold sale.
Salo. The first lot's in the ring as we speak, so I'm going to be late. I better go.
All right, get out there.
See ya. See ya, Shark.
Thanks for filling in for Matty Stewart. Another big weekend for Rosemont. Get out to the sales if you want to buy anything. Sharky, you've got a little bit of time off, so enjoy the next few weeks and we'll catch up with you very soon.
And I'll see you Friday before I go. One last form focus
before I head north
and do some of the breeding sales up there. But no, looking forward to seeing you in there and finish with a bang for a week off.
We need it. We need all you can give us on Friday, Sharknado. We will see you then.
Good on you, Michael.